Since I'm last on the program, I'll, in true extension format, I'll just speak until the dinner arrives that Drew ordered. I think you're going to have that set up in the back of the room, Drew, right?
They're here long enough.
Okay. I appreciated the talk from Dr. Redmond there because his summary slide was a perfect setup into what I'm going to lead into. It also is going to work well with the idea that I'm going to talk about a very unique approach or a different approach than I think what Dr. Redmond was talking about. And that is, we have tried in Illinois to design a program that really empowers the people, if you will, or the growers in the state, and to try to just give them the tools to do on-farm research and where we have a lot less control. And that's pretty scary. And as on the summary slide on the last presentation, one of the main bullet points is that on-farm research is a challenge. And so we certainly admit that right up front in our program. So one thing I wanted to be cautious about in my presentation is that I'm not overly positive about what we're doing or overly negative about what we're trying to do in Illinois. I do think it's an interesting twist. We just haven't figured out whether we're twisting like a good projectile on target with where we want to go, or whether it's a little more like a death spiral. But we'll find out as we go over the next couple years. But if any of you've seen some of the media over the last year, we have launched something called the Illinois Soybean Yield Challenge. So we certainly put the word challenge in this title instead of contest. But this challenge is really born based off kind of an old yield contest format sort of thing, where we want growers to really see how high they can produce soybean yields in the state of Illinois. The website for this, where you can get a lot of information as well, soyyieldchallenge.com, is on the front slide, but you'll see it again several slides throughout. So let there be light. So I will talk about a couple things that makes this program unique. And again, this has been a new program for us this year, so I don't want to sound too much like a promotion through this thing, but what I'm going to do is just try to clearly describe what it is and how it is we're trying to do it. The first thing that really makes the program unique, I believe, is that we're trying to approach this from a team approach at several different levels, and I'm going to describe that. The other thing is, we really wanted this to be a focus on data and comparisons of side-by-side research, and to try to develop more of an on-farm research network. But I think it's going to take several years before we get to the point of where we have real useful data. And why do we think, and this is going to look like a monstrosity when we get going, and why do we think we can do it now? The first thing is, revolves around the desire to increase soybean yields. And so whenever you have a lot of desire, a lot of motivation, that can get a lot of things done. And we have growers in Illinois that are very motivated to try to figure out how to increase soybean yields. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. Website interface for data collection and more advanced farmers and agronomists, computers and technology is getting more integrated in everything our growers are doing. And better computational power to analyze data if we get it all collected after we've done this for a few years. So starting out with the levels of the team approach, if you will, the thing with the yield challenge is it has become kind of a monster all on its own. It is kind of a thing. It is not something of the Illinois Soybean Associations. It's not something of the universities. In fact, it is a conglomeration of all four state institutions working together. Much of it is on the University of Illinois, but the other three state institutions as well, the National Soybean Research Laboratory, Illinois Soybean Association, and our Grower Marketing Board. Checkoff dollars is certainly the driving force behind an awful lot of this. And we have had a lot of input from industry sponsors, both large industry sponsors all the way to small industry sponsors, small companies, all the way down to the agribusiness level co-ops, that sort of thing across the countryside. The second part of this team-based concept, something you have to somewhat understand about the way our checkoff board works in the state of Illinois, is we have five what's called managed research areas in Illinois, and you can get all this information off the Illinois Soybean Association website. Five managed research areas that concern themselves with production, that is, genetics and breeding, soybean disease and insect pests, soybean cyst nematode, variety information program for soybean, VIPS, many of you may have seen, and weeds. So the yield challenge is to become a clear connection between the checkoff dollar managed research areas. And the way these managed research areas work is they're really teams of people that cross these universities and other universities that are all interested in one particular subject. And of course, they all have their own outcomes as they continue to write new proposals and stuff like that. The growers want those outcomes related to yield in the field for the farmers. And so they're pressuring these MRAs to say, how does your production research relate to the field? And we want to see proof of that. So the purpose really is to capture and provide data for evaluation by all the parties involved. It's to encourage strategies for yield and profit and reveal high yield practices, but also to we try to continue to promote sustainable purposes as well. But if we put it kind of in a schematic, what we hope this process does is we generate some data from the field, although a lot of our side-by-side data aren't maybe going to be highly scientific and standalone on their own, some of these descriptive observations we'll make, but we hope it will raise interesting questions that go back into these managed research areas to the researchers and say, here are interesting observations from this program, what research should be designed around it. On the flip side, the information that come out of these managed research areas, the growers want to see implemented, and part of those objectives, those deliverables, we all know how to write into grant proposals, is how does this translate to yield? How can this be implemented in our yield challenge program on the farms? How can we take it to those growers in this program? Continuing on with this team concept, no one grower is by himself in terms of developing a yield. Okay, so we don't want another mystery man of soybean yields. So any competition that we put behind that is an average of five growers' yields off of team up to 10 growers. And so here's definitely a challenge right here. It's getting growers to work together on a team. That doesn't always work well, at least in our state or in the Midwest, when the battle for ground and the competition between some of these growers is very, very high. Each side-by-side is a minimum of 5 acres, so we have a check plot and a challenge plot. I'll talk a little bit more about that. Again, the average of the top five will be used for awards and gifts, if you will, and there are cash or gift card prizes for these. This program also involves students. The growers and the Soybean Association really wants to have FFA, high school level, and community colleges. We have a plot on several community colleges in all 9 districts of the state because they're very concerned with how do we get much younger people interested in production agriculture, and this is one of the programs they wanted to use to do that. So it allows FFA chapters and stuff to go after a project that they can do, and that's all free for that level of students. There's no entry fee to be in the program. So again, why now? What makes this work? I already said our growers are very motivated to increase soybean yields. This is one of the reasons why over the last 20 years we've seen yield increasing at about a third of a bushel per year. A lot of growers and agribusiness are concerned this rate is not fast enough or increasing fast enough, particularly in comparison to corn. In 2010, I think that will cool off the jets a little bit as we've had a phenomenal soybean year and less than stellar corn year, I remind Emerson often recently. The other reason is, of course, the press coverage and the popularity of, you know, Kip Cullers in Missouri getting these 160 bushels and now having the, you know, breaking the yield record three times over the last 4 or 5 years. And so we do definitely have motivated growers on our board who want some of that attention for Illinois and for the yields we produce. Just to support, so I actually have data in this presentation to support these claims. We use Turning Point technology at a lot of our winter grower meetings throughout the state. These are from January 2010. I asked a couple questions here. One, this was primarily to growers, some agribusiness, but I asked a question, has soybean yield hit a plateau? 53% said, no, it hasn't hit a plateau, but it's not increasing fast enough for them. 31% said, yes, it's hit a plateau, and they're frustrated with yields. 11% said, yeah, but they're stable, they're okay. But only 4% are basically satisfied with soybean yield. This is a slide I felt really interesting because I asked this question after I presented to them that our yields have been increasing at a third of a bushel per year and 4/10 of a bushel per year if we go back over the last 40 years, as we all know. But 50% of them still think they, you know, have a goal to increase between 5 and 10 bushels that next year, and another 38% 2 to 5 bushels. So when we have an average yield of a third a bushel, it seems rather progressive to think that you need to increase at least 2 bushel from year to year. So they have big goals. Of course, I get talked as well, or asked to speak, as well as a lot of my colleagues, on high-yield soybean management because of this desire. And I often go through all of the classic things about how important fertility and variety selection, and in particular, agronomics, and of course, the fact that you need good pest protection, and the importance of scouting, the importance of making a plan. I go through all the classical things. We certainly have a lot of focus on variety selection, not only in my state, but in all of your states as well. Every state, I believe, has publicly available variety trial testing data for soybean and other crops. And so we've all known as agronomists that variety selection is important. We also have in Illinois the VIPS program, which I talked about, and that takes variety selection a little beyond yield. And actually, we present both in web and book format every year a lot of efficacy information as well as yield that relates to soybean cyst nematode resistance and other disease tolerances, as well as quality traits. But there was still a question from a lot of our growers interested in that, what about everything else? And that's where this program really came into play, was it was about developing a program for growers to go access their own information about everything but variety selection, which gets to one of the rules I'll talk a little bit more about later. One thing I want to point out is, even though I've talked about this being a statewide thing, yields are not determined on a statewide basis, even though I presented the linear trend. All of the challenge yields actually focus by district. We have 9 crop reporting districts in our state. We broke it down by district to try to provide that local relevance. So there's no overall state winners for a team in our state. There will be a winning team in every district of the state in all 9. And you can kind of see the divisions in our state from north to south. The yields, let's see if I get his mouse to come up. The yields down here in the southern part of Illinois are these two lines on average, much below the average here. And if I put it in a table so it's really simple to see, we can see for crop reporting district, there's on any given year, at least a 10 bushel average difference for the crop reporting district. So we didn't want Southern Illinois growers or Southwest Illinois growers to be disadvantaged compared to the Central and Northern Illinois prairie soils we have to grow these on. The second part of this challenge is that opposite of a contest, we wanted the comparisons to be side by side. So we would get data on what their normal practices were. And I've been as excited about trying to get, you know, this as a mechanism to collect data on what they typically do, it just as well as I have been on what they want to do for high yield practices. But side by side comparisons is a part of that. One big thing that brings into the challenge is it doesn't allow a grower to go out in a 160 acre field and pick the best 2 acres at harvest time, whether that be in the lower area or the upper area of the field. They have to establish that early on in the season. So these side-by-side comparisons, we say, have to be joined or adjacent. Use the same variety on every plot. The use the same variety on every plot is probably the hardest rule we have in the whole contest. And what I mean by hardest is, I guess, the most less lenient rule. We won't bend that rule at all, for sure. They all have to submit soil samples from hopefully before they till. We're trying in the fall. And then they have to disclose records, or be willing to disclose records, of all their practices used throughout the plots. And the plot sponsor has to provide a third-party verifier, or the team captain, rather, I should say, has to provide a third-party verifier. We're also collecting grain sample for quality analyses as well. So what type of data are we collecting? We're trying to actually collect the entire data that we can throughout the whole crop season. And that I know that sounds like a lot, and it is. It's about if written out, it's about 30 plus pages. It's too much. When you set it down, people just gloss over and say, holy cow, there's no way we can do this. But in fact, we're at least giving it a try. But field history, soil testing, planting information, applications, what they do, why they did it. We ask for weekly scouting reports. We're trying to do it all electronic. We require they provide GPS coordinates for all the corners of the plots, so we can then look up not only weather information, but also soil mapping information with Webb Soil Survey and other things we can do. Again, the harvest is verified. Here's just an illustration of a side-by-side. I probably didn't need to show this. We all know what a side-by-side looks like, but this was the actual University of Illinois Yield Challenge plot. Again, I won't argue side-by-sides aren't the best way to do some things, but again, we really wanted the data on just what normal practices were across the state. Now, the process, what we're trying to do to empower the growers and the team captains, is all of this is set up through an interactive website. The website I already gave, soilyieldchallenge.com. Team captains, after they've identified their sponsor, they log into this. They can establish their team name. They get login information. They can get logins for their growers, or the growers can allow the team captain to have the login for their growers. So some team captains enter all the information for the growers, but growers can do all of their own information, and growers can actually enter their own information and lock their team captain out if they so choose. This is a snapshot of what the Yield Challenge website looks like when you go into it. There are teams here. You see grower teams, student teams. They have their own things. Current team sponsors, so we have things listed, testimonials. I probably should have done a lot more screenshots here. I could have showed you how to click on all these, but again, you guys can go to this and learn an awful lot more. Down here at the bottom, which is actually more in the center of the page, if you actually go to it, is the Yield Challenge data login. So once a captain, team captain, has all of their information, they are able to log in. They get a screen that looks a little bit like this. I have a lot more. This is my profile, and I'm an admin, so I have a lot more options here from an administration standpoint in here. But this is similar to what the grower gets, or the team captain gets, and he just clicks on simply what he's about to upload. Once he goes in that, there's a very successive method to how things are entered in terms of the crop history. It takes a little while for them to get some of that set up before they can go on, but then after that, it's a really free program to work through. It's set up a little, if any of you have taken online surveys like SurveyMonkey or something like that, it asks a lot of questions. Did you do this practice? Yes or no? And if you answer yes or no, that determines what questions come up next. There are features built in where they can upload things as well. And then on the admin side, we upload a lot of stuff. So we collect their soil samples. We split it off for soybean cyst type testing and fertility analyses. So we'll have fertility analyses on every one of the plots done at the same commercial laboratory, if you will, instead of asking them to do that. When we look for soil characteristics, we're doing that all through the web soil survey, so we don't ask them what their soil type is. We're going to go, we go and look that up ourselves. So we've built a lot of that into it. This here, just to show you a little bit about what our participation has been this year. As an admin, I can log on and see the participation count or the grower roll count. You can see here that we had 12 registered admins, which is myself, Valerie Klingerman, she works for me and manages a lot of this. Managers, which is another level, these are actually most of the programmers that actually write the code, which I could talk more about. And then so here are the team captains. So we have 48 team captains registered right now, 253 growers, which is inflated by a few because we have a few practice growers that are still in there. And when we try to troubleshoot, we log into to kind of a dummy profile. We know what it is, but it's about 247, 48 individual growers in here, and then three sponsors. So we have a sponsor level. So we have corporate sponsors that pay the entry fee for one team in all 9 districts of the state. So basically they've paid the entry for at least 90 growers, and they have levels of permission where they can request, go in and then generate a report for all of the growers they sponsor, but they can't get all of the data for other growers that they don't sponsor, for instance. This is just a map. I was going to say on the last slide, we were hoping in the first year of launch to have around 400 to 500 growers in the program on the first year out. I think that was a little aggressive on our thinking. Sometimes we think, well, we didn't accomplish what we wanted to accomplish, but then on other days we think 250 has been a lot for us to try to figure out how to manage and how to handle. And you know, it's easy in the wintertime, as many of us know, to sit down and keep writing things on that, you know, materials and methods that we're going to do in the field, and then when we get into practice, some things become a whole lot more challenging than they seemed when we were sitting at our desk, right? And that's been the experience with me thinking about numbers of people a little bit and what we have and what we don't have. It looks a little more real when we start to look at the number of locations that we got established throughout the state this year. This actually isn't completely accurate. For instance, some of the snags we ran into, we tried to make it really easy as they uploaded GPS coordinates, and we put, you know, very clearly in letters, don't enter any negatives. As we all know, we're all at negative, right? So we said, don't worry about entering negatives, because some GPS, depending on how they got their GPS coordinates, may not show negatives, but some still have negatives. So if this is actually interactive, if I log into the website and I can go find some locations we have over in China. So I think this is good from an administrative standpoint. I can show international impact. So we worked through those little glitches. The program for me, what I was saying is, you know, when we look at the numbers, we think, well, are we being doing as well as we wanted to? But it's become very real throughout the summer as we started dealing with some of these teams and some of these people. And sometimes it's hard to sit at the desk and say, we only have 200 and some farmers in this program, but then you go meet 10 or 15 or 20 at a time, and you understand some of the time that some of these growers have invested and the pride they have in what they're doing a little bit, and it makes it really real from a standpoint. This is a team in Brimfield, Central Illinois. This is a team captain here by the sign here, and has just done a phenomenal job throughout the year getting data in and being very thorough in reporting. Here's another team, and I won't go through hundreds of pictures of teams. We have more, but this is another Elburn co-op team sponsored by Pioneer in Northern Illinois. Team captain is here in the center, and again, this team has just done a phenomenal job of getting information into the program and being very complete and thorough with all of the data. So I see Drew standing up, and I've left an awful lot about this program, some of the positives and challenges out, and there's a lot of details about this program that I haven't fully covered, So hopefully we can have lots of interactions and you all can ask questions, because I know there are a lot of other people that have asked me from other states, hey, we want to implement this in our state. And we do have some things in Illinois that I think have helped us launch this, and that comes at those early teen levels I've talked about. It's not undoable, I guess, but it has been a challenge. So hopefully my summary slides don't come off too negative, at least the first ones here. But the one thing I've learned, if you think back to the slide I showed that has all those logos of all the people involved, sometimes it's been the first year a real challenge of who's on first and who's actually responsible for different pieces of this program. Because I said it's really been something that's taken on a life of its own. And so communication, who's on first has been a really important thing for us to overcome. We hope all this is going to get smoother as we go throughout. Again, communication, I believe, was discussed on a summary slide of the one before. Here's another important one. Maybe this is just me, I don't know, but I pretty much thoroughly determined that computer programmers are not agronomists, and agronomists are not computer programmers. And that comes from both myself, who developed basically the base of the questions and the information that I wanted in the program. I was the one that sat down and wrote the original 30-page document and flow of what questions should be asked and how those questions should be linked. And I can just tell you, I ran it through a committee of people to review, and I think an awful lot of them said, yeah, it looks good. So there were some things that seemed very obvious to me that when it was given off to the computer programmers, when it was done, didn't make sense. And so we had to make a lot of changes and tweaks from that regard, because they didn't understand a lot of the things, and I could give some examples with that. Here's been another one. We're only 1 year into this program, and it's already something that can make my blood pressure rise when I'm sitting in my office and some calls come in. But definitely learned that everyone desires data generated by others. So keep that in mind. We have publicized that you know, all of the data, once filtered for a lot of the personal information, is in some form or another going to be publicly available, because it's funded by checkoff dollars. So that's going to be the next step, figuring out, you know, how we make that searchable. It's going to be in a searchable database, so growers and people can log in and you know, do very simple queries if they want. But that's going to take a little bit of time. But definitely surprised by some of the calls that come in. But on a more positive note, the one thing we've definitely learned is our most successful yield challenge teams so far have been from the crop input suppliers. And I'm going to give a talk tomorrow in a symposium tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to talk about how crop and dealer input suppliers will be one thing I point out. In Illinois, are rated pretty highly as their information source from growers. And what I've learned definitely in this program is they have been the best to work with. We have teams sponsored by some of the major corporations, and they're managed by R&D guys or large sales rep guys that may be covering a third of a state, and they don't have the grower connection. The other thing we've learned is they're pretty interested in maybe 1, 2, 3 products. And it's this, the co-ops and the fertilizer dealers, they're the ones that have a very direct connection with the growers and seem to really have the interest of the growers, no matter which product it is they may be interested in. So they've also, the ones been most successful, many of them have given this project to a summer intern and said, this is the project for you this summer, is to manage these 8, 9, 10 growers. And so these growers feel like they're really getting a special service. I think there's a whole customer relationship thing going on there. But the interns do a phenomenal job. And of course, they're the ones interested in the scouting and the other things. So with that, I just want to thank my graduate students and crew here. They do a lot of work, both on the University Challenge plot itself, as well as processing soil samples and many other things that are coming in and out of the lab for this program. So with that, I appreciate your attention as the last talk of the day, and be happy to take questions.
Okay, we can take questions quickly for Vince, and then we'll open it up to all three of our speakers. So any specific questions? Yes.
I've been a little disheartened the last couple of days in the talk around some of these types of things. And maybe it's implied, and based on the data that you're gathering, maybe it's there. But I haven't really heard the word profitability in the last 2 days. And so, you know, we seem to be in the same thing, trying to meet the coffee shop talk of, you know, I did better than you because I got 5 bushels more. Not the fact that it cost me $25 and we're crazy to get that. Am I missing something, or you know, where are we going to get profitability in this thing?
Yeah, that's a very good question. If I could cap that a little bit. The real question is, where are we going to get profitability in these sort of projects? It's very important. There has been many discussions more than once about adding cost to different products and things like that in this program and working with some of the economic and farm management models out there. At this point, that is far more complex than we're really even ready to handle in terms of we've discussed. There are a lot of places throughout this program where there are drop-down menus, so growers can just select in drop-downs what they've done. And we have discussed trying to build drop-down menus for a lot of the most common products, and then with that can be maybe tied to a cost for that particular product. That would increase the complexity of this by significant magnitudes, so we are not ready to accomplish that. However, I will say the one thing related to economics that I did put into this, and I should say that as of last week, we had over 85 locations submitted their final yield data report out of the 200 and some. So we're feeling decent about that. But on the harvest form, we ask two questions. One question is whether the grower felt the practices in their experimental or their challenge plot were profitable, and whether or not they learned anything that they will apply to their other production areas the next year. And so that was really, it's really one question. We kind of put it in their hands to tell us, would you have made money on the plot where you tried whatever you wanted to try, yes or no? And you know, did you learn something out of it that you're going to apply to other acres? And maybe they thought they learned something they really didn't. We won't know. But those are really the only two questions we've kind of built in as kind of a summary conclusion that we hope someday, as we generate more and more of these, we can start to tease some of that out a little bit. But we don't really know how to feasibly tackle the economic model question, I guess, if you will.
Okay, now we've got to open it up for our other two speakers, Larry or Keith, or any discussion amongst yourselves, some points you want to make or something like that. So there were some hands back there, maybe there were just questions.
I'll just continue questions for the speaker here. What kind of treatments were the most common treatments that were in the challenge plots?
So the question was, what treatments were the most common treatments in the challenge plots? To be honest with you, I haven't had enough time to analyze those data yet. As you know, they've been coming in basically over the last week and they're still coming in. I've fished around a little bit and I've been looking at things. I think I can reasonably hypothesize a lot of foliar fungicide, a foliar insecticide, a lot of foliar nutrient applications are going to be very common in the program. I feel confident about making that prediction, and I have already seen some of that a little bit. But I have been surprised. We have had growers that are doing planting date experiments where they've used two planting dates. We have had several do different populations. We have some strip till and fertility applied in strips in some locations. So it's quite a variety right now, and it definitely depends on what different team captains are interested in and then what different sponsors are interested in as well. So it's kind of wide open with whatever they want to do. Again, the only rule was, we have stressed time and time again, that we do not in any way, shape, or form want us to be a variety comparison. So the one rule is that they have to have the same variety on both plots that are connected, but other than that, it's wide open. So, that answer your question?
Okay.
Just a basic question, maybe interested. Are the teams all doing, each individual farmer doing individual practices, or as a team together, are they deciding a common practice to conduct?
Good question. So the question was, are they all doing something the same, or are they all doing their own thing? It's wide open that they can all do their own thing. And again, what we've tried to do, and we've met with the team captains several times, and we've tried to tell team captains, again, we're trying to empower them to make it what they want. And we've tried to tell them, all we're trying to do is give you a program that here it is. It gives you a mechanism to collect all of the data. And then at the end, you'll be able to compare your data, which comes back in a data report with, you know, data that we've collected in other districts and other things across the state. But they can, as a team, either organize to test one thing or different things on every farm. And to follow up, it can be one single thing per plot, or it can be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things.
So is there a base program the programmers use to import database, or what are you using?
The database is all PHP.
Do you have a sense of what the most common basis for the formation of the teams were? Was it having a common input supplier, or was it some other basis for people deciding, yes, who would be a team?
Yeah, that was in the first year. The question was, what's the most common denominator we've seen for the basis of forming teams? Do I understand that right? Yeah. That was probably the most interesting thing going into our first year. And that's why we thought we were going to have over 400 growers at one point in time, because we were talking with corporate sponsors who said, we're going to pay for one team in every district, and we anticipate filling those teams. And then on the other hand, we were talking with, say, CPS and the Grow Marks of the world, and they're saying, they're contacting us, say, well, we have a team down in this location, we have a team in this location. And then many times what we found out is, you know, the corporate sponsors were sponsoring the teams at these co-ops, and we didn't know all the relationships of who was sponsoring who. The Brimfield team, for instance, I showed up here, has 3 industry sponsors for their team listed as industry sponsors. Some has just one sponsor. We have a few agronomists, again, I think the ones that are doing a really good job in the team at that co-op level are the ones like that who have 3 different company sponsors, and they have taken initiative on their own to say, I'm not going to do what, you know, maybe one corporate sponsor wants me to do. I'm going to form a team of my growers, and we're going to do whatever I'm interested in among my growers. So sometimes they've been the common denominator. For other companies, the common denominator has been a top-down approach, which we've seen not work well, where corporate has come in and said, we like this program. Tell your district guys that they're all going to put together a team. And we've had some complaints from growers who've said, I'm on a team, I don't know my other team members, I've only talked to my team captain on the phone, I don't know him, and they're pretty disheartened by the whole thing. On the flip side of that, if I go back to Brimfield, we found out at the end of the season, the Brimfield guy had like 5 or 6 team meetings in the evenings throughout the summer, that they were kind of holding shop and allowing their intern to give crop updates, not only of the yield challenge teams, but I think of other crop scouting reports and what's going on. So it's been all levels and ranges, and I think those are the things that are going to have to play themselves out.
If I can take that just one step further, insights into that, do you usually see the team leader emerge first and then they form the team, or does the team form first and then the leader is chosen out of that?
Yeah, the question is, do we see the team leader form the team, or, you know, growers emerge looking for a team? That's been another challenge of ours, actually. I think in many cases the team leader came first, but we also have a lot of growers that continue to contact us and say, you know, where do I sign up? And you know, who can be my captain, sort of thing. So we have growers that maybe aren't working closely with a co-op or fertilizer input supplier. They may be a little bit more independent. They want to be very involved, but they don't already have a connection. So there's been a lot of just trying to set them up on a team. There's been contacts made, said, you know, you guys are short members. We have a grower that wants to be on a team. In many cases, you know, how often does kind of a sales leader or district guy get a call and say, there's a grower that, you know, wants to be on a team? I mean, it gives that guy an opening to get on a new farm. So I think those relationships have worked themselves out for the most part. But, you know, again, it's been a difficult thing where we're trying to develop a program that kind of empowers the people, if you will. But then sometimes there are people that kind of are looking for support and looking for the connections, someone to help them build these connections. So again, it's all levels, and that's been a challenging thing to deal with.
Do we have any questions for our first speakers, either Keith or Larry? Or any comments on this? What I've noticed is we had the whole spectrum. This particular example seems like the most hands-off approach from the university.
Well, I don't know about that. I would take help, Drew.
But I mean, as far as the university's attention to the actual teams, which, and then we've had some very hands-on, so we've had quite a spectrum. Might be some interesting discussion as to the different pros and cons of the different approaches. I think this one might be driven by the fact that lots of interest, not a lot of personal time. All of us are losing the ability to spend that one-on-one time, and yet we see what can happen when we do spend one-on-one time. Can be quite valuable, but you can't touch as many people. So, any questions for Keith or Larry on any of theirs, or any comments anybody wants to make?
I got a comment.
Okay, please. Please make it up at the microphone so we get it recorded.
This is an observation and a thought, and in our world today, you know, the farmer of the future, the young people out there, they're sitting in their combine, looking at their yield monitor. Auto steer is in control of the machine. They're texting away to their friends, and I think they're making decisions and on the go. You know, they live in a life where the turnaround is so quickly, you know, in their lifestyle. Instantaneous gratification, instantaneous, you know, everything's instantaneous. And I think I'm concerned whether they're making management's decisions based on what they're seeing on the yield monitor as they're running through the field, and not knowing about or not thinking about year-to-year effect, not thinking about variabilities out there from field to field as far as soils and growing conditions, and are they being influenced by the 20 other people that text them from one end of the field to the next? That's just the thought I have.
I have a question for you while you're up there.
Yeah.
Yield monitors, calibration, and how do you deal with it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I rode with a grower here this fall, and I said, geez, you know, those are pretty good yields. He said, don't worry about it. He says, that's 15 bushels more than what actually went across the scale. You know, he didn't take time to calibrate it. But he says, it makes me feel good. We have to make some assumptions when we work with growers. And you know, we assume that they're making an effort to calibrate their units, and the figures that we receive from them are actual. And a lot of them do compare, you know, what goes across the scale, either on their farm, which a lot of growers nowadays have, you know, they roll the semi-trucks up the scales on their farm, or what's going across in the elevator. And, you know, if they're lying, then who are they really lying to?
And the treatment differences will be picked up whether it's elevated or not, right? Your tent bush is different from treatment side by side.
But the economics could be a little different.
Sometimes. Right. And the gentleman asked the profitability question. Were you here when I spoke?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, that ends our time. There's probably more questions. The room is open, but I think we'll close this or bring this to an end. Let's thank our speakers one more time.